The Copywriter Club podcast is sponsored by AirStory, the writing platform for professional writers who want to get more done in half the time. Learn more at airstory.co/club.
So what if you could hang out with really talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Kira and I try to do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 17 as we chat with conversion copywriter and analytics expert Momiko Price about conversion optimization, the role analytics plays in her process, running a live copywriting course, and how she's attracted high caliber clients like Intuit, Scotiabank, and AT&T. Rob. Hey, Momo.
Kira.
Hi.
Momo, how's it going?
How's it going? Thanks for being here, Momo. I think a good place to start with you is kind of the story before this story. So how did you end up as a conversion copywriter?
Oh, my God. Well, I started out... Okay, so I originally started out in science at school. Can you hear me still?
Yes.
Okay. So I started out in science. I did... I specialized in evolutionary biology, went to grad school for that, realized that despite liking science and all that stuff, that lab work was not my lifestyle. I did not want to do that. And then I had always straddled between science and also doing journalism and writing. It was kind of like a dual strength. And then so I hopped over into journalism right around the time of the financial crisis. And I worked as a copy editor for one of the larger newspapers in Canada and, you know, did some freelance writing and stuff like that. And then as I started to do that, like I was living in Toronto and there's a pretty like healthy tech scene there. And one of the things that really frustrated me when I was working, you know, in the newsroom at a newspaper was just like, you can kind of feel the Luddite-ism in the newsroom. Like it was just like the sheer feeling of apprehension when dealing with like the internet and technology and like everything that was happening with publishing. And I was just like, this is not where I want to be in my, like, I don't think it's a good idea to be heading down, despite how much I like writing. I don't necessarily see this being the best place to be. Like, I want to actually be in a field of work that embraces technological innovation as opposed to like running screaming from it.
Yeah.
So then I can't even remember how it happened, but I met some people who were working at a couple of startups in Toronto. And then there was a guy who was like founding one. He was like, I like the cut of your jib. I'm going to hire you. And I worked for him. And then the more I did that, I just started hanging out with more people in tech. And eventually that went from, you know, writing for tech and like, you know, doing some freelance work. And then I can't even remember how I started getting into conversion copywriting, probably because I stumbled across Joanna Weeb's stuff. And then when I started realizing that like, oh, like there's this whole world of like writing, like communication, but also like leveraging analytics and data to be able to try to generate hypotheses. And like, it all just came together as like, oh my God, like a scientific process plus data, plus internet, plus writing. I was like, this works for me. This checks off all of my things I like without me having to work in a lab or, you know, like any of the stuff that I don't like. So that's like the long winding road to carving out a niche and a job that I feel like most of the time when people ask me what I do, I don't even know what to say. It happens all the time, especially like in my, like at the gym or whatever, you know, people will be like, oh, what do you do? And someone will be like, I'm a lawyer. Or like, I'm a, you know, I renovate houses or whatever. And I'm like, I technically write copy, but also look at data and run tests. And like, it's just,
it's a kind of an odd specialization that works for you though.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I think, I feel like I'm struggling with it now because there is such a, and I think you guys would probably agree, there is a big chasm between doing the analytics and like running, like actually executing the tests and understanding how to manage all of the things that can go wrong and having that control over the deployment and execution of the tests and like generating the creative and also gathering the research off of which to generate the creative. Like those are like three separate areas, and they're all like, even within themselves, they're all, they can be jobs.
Yeah.
There are their own jobs. Like there's the analytics guy, and then they're like the analytics and maybe test guy. Like sometimes the analytics people don't even like, they're not really all that well versed in running the test. And then there's like, you know, there's the creative person who's the designer, the copywriter, whatever. And then there's the marketing guy or the research guy or girl, you know, whatever. And it's like, when you try to do it right, you have to kind of have some level of at least confidence in all of those. And even like, and also like, even like a little bit of like content strategy on top of that, because you have to be able to like have someone who's going to oversee that deliverables from or requirements from one aspect of this process move smoothly into the next one. And there aren't like gaps or miscommunications or like screw ups or whatever. So it's like, it's a tricky job. Like, I feel like it's constantly evolving and rife with frustrations, especially when you're coming from it from the creative side, where they're like, you know, or like I say creative, but I guess I mean content or how, whatever the term is for like the treatment that you create to test the hypothesis that you're supposed to be generating in the ideal case. But I feel like a lot of people don't even think about it that way. They just think, you know, oh, I want quote unquote higher conversions, therefore I'm going to hire a conversion copywriter or expert and they're going to just make that happen. And we don't have to actually put all the pieces together in terms of research and testing and all that stuff to make it happen. Like, I don't know. It's tricky. It's a tricky job.
I think a lot of copywriters talk about how they do research and they look at your analytics, especially people that call them conversion copywriters. But,
yeah.
But Momo, you take it to an extreme that I've never seen anybody else do in a good way. You know, you shared your process with us a few weeks ago, at least a glimpse at it, and the check sheet that you've got for, you know, starting an engagement. Will you talk a little bit about how analytics works into your process and what you do as you're onboarding a client to make sure that everything is set up so that you can succeed with the project?
This is something that I'm actually transitioning more into now by phasing out projects or client inquiries where they are asking me about like, can you just like write this page or can you just like optimize this page? So one of the big onboarding changes that I have made is when someone asks me for a project, I don't even really, or ask me to like work on a project for them, you know, and maybe they say it's a homepage or a landing page or whatever. I just send a handful of questions back that I have set up that go straight to the analytics. Like they go straight to like, what is the click-through rate? What is your conversion goal? Oh, maybe I can find the questions actually that I have. But basically it's just like, it's just forcing them to verify to me that they actually understand what they're asking for when they say, I want you to optimize this page. Because if they don't have their baseline analytics like sorted out and they don't know like, This is the testing tool we're using. This is the analytics tool that we're using. Yes, they are, you know, integrated and they're functioning properly. And our baseline is this. We would like to achieve this. And so far, as we've been trying, we've failed to do that. And we think it might be because of this, right? Like if they don't have that thought process figured out yet, they're not, in my mind, they're not ready to do what they want to have, which is the magical conversion optimization project, because it's such a hot term right now, right? So, yeah. So for me, it's like, if, you know, I will say that, and then a certain fraction of people with whom I answer back and I say, okay, what's your baseline copywriting, what's your baseline conversion rate and conversion goal? How much traffic are you dealing with? Obviously, because you need like to that page, because obviously if we want to run tests, then we need to make sure that you have enough traffic so that we have tests that are actually even remotely conclusive. Those kind of, the big questions are like traffic and baseline conversion rate. Do you know those things? and that really opens the door, because then you will either have people who just ghost and they just don't get back to you because it's like not even a road that they that's like, oh, that's complicated. Like, I thought you were just going to give me high conversion rate. Or you'll get back a certain fraction of people who will come back to you and they're very literate in what they're talking about. They just have a gap in their process, which is someone who understands how to take research or, you know, generate research and actually like create a treatment that they can deploy, you know, with good writing and good layout and stuff like that. So that's like the big onboarding difference that I have made. And the thing that I think a lot of people would be uncomfortable with from a copywriting perspective is the fact that you will lose leads. They're shitty leads. Sorry, they're crappy leads. but you'll lose them. Like you have to kind of be okay with that. Like you have to question whether or not, you know, do you want lots of clients or do you want good clients? Right? Like clients that you can have like a professional back and forth where they're upfront and transparent and generous with the data and the intel that they have so that you can do good work. So that was like the biggest difference for me. And now I'm starting to just focus primarily on one service offering that I have realized is something that I want to start out with for any engagement period, which is basically like a conversion funnel audit. Where I look at their content of they pick a funnel, you know, which is basically just like visitors enter through here and we want them to get to this checkout point and completed transaction point, right? That's what we're focusing on. So you pick that funnel, you give me access to your Google Analytics, let me know which pages I'm supposed to navigate through, and then I will go through that and I will assess both of those things based on like a, you know, a report structure that I use to kind of find out where the biggest problem spots are and then generate a handful of tests, simple tests that are designed to target those things. And then they can take that and they can take it and they can go and do it on their own if they want to. And if they screw it all up, that's fine. But I'm not on the hook for that. Or we can continue to work with each other and like actually deploy it together and optimize together. So that's like the primary. 2017 is like my focus is like only doing that because it's really what you need to do in my mind to get started on the right foot.
So you mentioned kind of the conundrum of having all these different specialties on one project, like the analytics person, someone who's testing, conversion mm-hmm. copywriter, designer. So how do you handle this now? Because I feel like that's the same, that it stresses me out too. I'm like, do I need to find contractors to work with, you know, for the testing part and analytics part. I'm just getting into that now, but that's the direction I want to go. And I'm just not sure how.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, I just learn the stuff because I'm a data geek. So I'll just go in and a lot of the tests are not super overly complicated when I'm for the ones that I want to do. I think that probably getting someone who is like, if that's not your bag, then you would probably just want to hire somebody to do it to get. And but a lot of times, like, I feel like a lot of places the trickiest thing I think is like a lot of places that will hire someone to generate like conversion copy or whatever, they have a testing, like they have a developer, they have like someone who's doing analytics. So it's mainly more about like asserting that like I need to be in contact with that person at the start of the engagement and just being like, we need to actually nail down what the goal is on this page. Like I think one of the things that's a huge, or I'll redirect a client inquiry like right away is this idea that like, can you optimize this quote unquote page? Because that's not a thing. Like you want to optimize a funnel, right? And the funnel essentially breaks down into landing on a page and then clicking an element on that page to get to the next page. That's like the fundamental flow of any funnel, right? To make money or to generate a lead or whatever. So once you start redirecting the conversation to focus on that, then the client starts to realize like that. And then you have to be like, okay, so now that we're not talking about just a page and we're talking about this funnel, let's start talking about where are you losing people. And once you start opening that avenue of conversation, then the whole idea of like getting the analytics person involved, like getting someone else involved who can give you these answers starts to make sense to the client. And that won't happen with every client. Like a lot of clients, they're like, I know what I want. Don't try to like upsell me or whatever. But that I find helps a lot with redirecting the whole process to focus on something that actually makes sense with the whole idea of conversion optimization, as opposed to this idea that like, I want higher lift rewrite this page and give me money, like, or like, and generate more money for me. That's the technique I use. But then again, like, if I was wanting to get really, these days I'm pretty okay with, like, I will go over the research, I will generate the treatments, and I will give them guidelines for testing and how to deploy and stuff like that. And they can take it and do it on their own if they want to work with me and I can oversee it, right? Like, what I'll do is I will say, do you want a round of pre-test quality assurance? Like, or so you guys set up the tests, but you can pay me to come in and look it over to make sure there aren't any mistakes before you deploy it, right? So they can do that. And that kind of takes me off the hook for having to really dig in and like get everything set up. And the scope of the project tends to like kind of explode if you start digging into like all the technical stuff. But at least having that ability to say, like, if you want, you can bring me in. I can look this over, make sure it's okay to go before you send it off, right? And like check off that checkpoint, I guess. And that works well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a really interesting conundrum from a client standpoint, because, you know, if they don't have that person on staff and they want to hire you, how do you work that into a copy project? You know, it's one thing to say, hey, I do landing pages for, you know, $2,500 or $5,000 or whatever, but yeah, I'm going to do your landing page, but I'm also going to help you fix your analytics. How do you price that into a project? What does that look like? And what would you charge for something like that?
I don't want to get into a situation where someone comes to me for a copywriting project and, you know, and they want to get higher conversions and all that stuff. And all of a sudden the scope of the project like bloats out enormously because I'm going to do all this analytics stuff. So generally what I will offer on my end, and this is also because they usually have an analytics person of some kind. So generally what I will sell is either an analytics audit, which is like, you know, like a grant. And it's just basically like I go through a checklist of things that I know in Google Analytics should be set up properly. Things like, you know, clearing out referral spam and making sure that your testing tool is integrated properly and, you know, all these other things. And that's for like a grand. Or they can opt for like just a simple pre-test setup quality assurance round where I'll go in once their test is ready and I'll take some time to just make sure that I don't see any glaring mistakes. And if I do, then I will let them know. But I don't necessarily like offer my services as like, I am really passionate about analytics and like, I like the data analysis stuff, but I also am not going to like try to sell a client who comes to me for quote unquote creative into like an upsell of like 50% on what they expected because, you know, there's all this other technical execution that they need to account for, right? So, because that's never going to work. Like, you're not going to be like, they'll just feel like you're, they'll just be like, you know. So that's what I'll do. Because I have struggled with that in the past. And I'm sure that probably a lot of copywriters who are trying to go down the road of conversion optimization have struggled with that also, is that people come to you to create the treatment, right? And that's what they want to pay for. And you can offer, if you offer to do the, also to do the testing, which I have done before, like being around to see through a testing round and then also optimize if it doesn't perform or like make tweaks based on the intel that you get. You can be on the hook for that client for like weeks because the test has to run. And then you have to come back and then you have to, you know, do the stuff. And so that can be a, like a huge engagement. So generally speaking, what I'll do is I'll just make sure I'll give them the option to pay for me to come in to assess and check. And then they can go and they do their thing. And then if they want to, you know, if they run that test and they're like, okay, cool. And they get, you know, they either get an improvement or, you know, they want to like go in and run another test or whatever, they can come back and we can like re-engage. But I don't necessarily go and, because I'm only one person, right? Like if I wanted to do a full conversion optimization, like agency style, like we take care, like you give us the problem and we take care of everything, then I would probably be doing it with, I would hire, like I would have a partner in crime on the analytics side of things.
Yeah, it seems like there's this black hole of, you know, yeah, fix my analytics. And like you said, that could be weeks long. And if you're only charging $1,000 for that, you're hosed.
Yeah. Yeah, like you can't, like I literally wanted to do, I wanted to do like analytics audits where I would fix all the problems also, as opposed to just like finding the problems and saying, go fix them. that can take a, like, depending on how complicated people's analytics setups are, that can take a really long time. So that's what I started with originally. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm going to be working for $5 an hour if I do this. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, unless I wanted to specialize only in analytics. And like, you can't really, you know, you got to pick your battles on what you, what is your primary specialization. And the reality is, like, I, with how much I enjoy tinkering with data and like doing like, and I think it's really interesting and I spend time like improving my skills on it. At the end of the day, the thing that people will pay me really good money to do is write good copy. You know, I'm not stupid. Like, I'm not going to be like, well, you came to me to write, you know, to rewrite your website copy. But what I really like to do is like data analysis. So I'm going to spend all my time doing that because, you know, you can, like we all know, you can't necessarily change a visitor's motivation, right? Like if they come to you for copy, they want copy, right? So it is something where I think, like you said, like I like the analysis and the data stuff more than your average bear, average copywriting bear. But it's still peripheral to my central service offering, right? Because it can get so time intensive and laborious to fix a bunch of analytics, especially when like people are really sensitive about their analytics too. Like if it's not easy to convince a company that probably already has, you know, at least a few developers to hand over the keys so that you can go in and start changing stuff up and tinkering with stuff. Like, I mean, people will do it, but it, you know, you have to kind of establish trust and stuff like that. So I try to make sure that I offer the ability to pay for quality assurance and checkpoints in terms of how you execute on my recommendations, but I don't necessarily try to sell me doing the whole thing. Cause yeah. It's just, I mean, maybe like that might be something I look to do like in the future. If I try to expand, like I've been thinking about, you know, kind of teaming up and offering more or whatever, but it's something I constantly waffle with because I'm kind of like, I like being one person and making a good living, taking care of just the work that I need to do and like not expanding beyond the scope of a company of one. I don't know. I think that's something we all struggle with as copywriters.
We interrupt this interview for a very special announcement.
The Copywriter Club has our first sponsor. It's AirStory. And before we get into what AirStory does for writers, we just wanted to share that this is actually a sponsorship we went after. We actually approached AirStory because we liked the tool so much and said, hey, would you guys like to sponsor the show? And we were thrilled when Joanna said yes, that they would like to. So Kira, you've played around a little bit with the tool. How would you use it as you create the sales pages that you work on?
Recently, I used it with a fellow copywriter and we were working on a sales page together. So it's a great tool to use with team members, fellow collaborators, and you're able to kind of piece the cards together with different sections of copy. Maybe you have a card for objections or for pain points, for key benefits, and you can kind of piece it together and create a sales page in an easy to use environment with a collaborator. It beats kind of jumping into Google Docs. My Google Docs usually look like a disaster by the time I'm done with them, and I have a hard time keeping track of all the content I need. So AirStory has been a great way to kind of stay organized, which is a challenge for me at times.
AirStory has this beautiful interface. It works really well, connects with Slack and Evernote, Typeform, even Gmail. If you want to learn more about AirStory, go to airstory.co/club to join and start your first project.
Momo, I'm shifting gears a little bit, but in the intro, we mentioned that you have these high caliber clients like AT&T. And then you also are creating, you're vetting potential clients. Mm-hmm. So you must have a lot of leads coming through, I would imagine. So I'm just wondering where you're finding these clients, kind of your ideal clients, how they're finding you, if you're doing any type of marketing efforts to find them.
Right. This is like my big, hilarious, I don't even know if it's a shame. It's just weird. But like, to be completely honest, like I don't do a lot. I do a pitiful amount of self-promotion. So one of the things is that I do get leads who notice either based on stuff that I have talked about in like public groups on Facebook where they talk about conversion optimization. I think sometimes comments that I make are a little bit more data savvy than people expect. And that has generated interest. Like people will be like, oh, like she knows, you know, she knows these weird subtleties about testing. And like, that's cool. And she also writes copy. So maybe we can fill that void. So that helps. I think that, but like, and oh, and I also, I mean, I think that also helped establish a lot of trust between me and like one of like, or Joanna Weeb has been referring clients to me for like years. I think a big part of that is because she feels okay. Like she feels good that like I understand the principles of writing good copy, but like she also knows that like I understand the data stuff. So she feels okay sending me a lot of leads. And then I get like a lot, like I have a pretty good like return rate on my clients. Like people come back and I guess referrals. Like it's really like, I really wish I could say that I do some like calculated marketing promotional stuff that like stabilizes my leads, but like I am shamefully passive about it right now. I'm hoping to make that change in 2017 for sure. Like I do really want to make sure, like I want to like simplify to just like one key service offering and then just like drive leads to that service offering and have it systematized. But I am like a marketing drifter. Like it's like, it's just like good things have happened. And like, I've been happy about that, but I have definitely have not gone and like taken charge and quote unquote, like 10x'd my leads or whatever, which apparently has become hugely popular these days.
Well, one way that you've gotten your name out there, at least towards the end of 2016, is you did this course with PEP and Conversion XL. If I remember right, it was like a 4-week course where you were presenting live, so it wasn't pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the process of developing that content and, you know, what it was like to actually do a live course. Because I'm imagining that a lot of people that would listen to this, you know, think, hey, I'd like to do a course someday. It doesn't look that hard, you know.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It actually went really well. Like I was terrified because I'm also kind of a big recluse. Like we live in the woods and like I hang out with my cats and my husband all day. So the idea of like walking people through a process over 4 weeks was like terrifying to me when it was first proposed to me. But you know, I think that the tricky thing about it was that it was very fast from having the concept of it, saying yes to it, and then like going forward with it. Like I think, so I was kind of, I have my process that I do. So that wasn't really an issue because I, you know, everyone has a process that they do for this kind of stuff. It was more about like putting together slides and putting together talks that like I felt were informative enough and organized enough and clear enough within a very short period of time. Because we were literally doing like 2 classes a week. And each class ended up being like 90 minutes long.
Yeah, that's a lot of content.
Yeah, it's a lot of content. I mean, admittedly, like, I think a fair amount of that was like me, because it was live. Like, I was like, it was like kind of like half slides and then half me like doing the process in front of them. You know, I'm sure that it kind of got into the weeds a little bit sometimes. But yeah, like, that was the tricky part, was like putting together like slides and a thought process, I guess, or a stream of consciousness that people would be able to follow like quickly enough. Cause I think like Pep like asked me if I wanted to do it. Like he just emailed out of the blue. He's like, hey, you want to do this? You want to teach a course? And I was like, okay, that sounds good. And like we were going to like launch it and then like start it like within like 3 weeks of him telling, like asking me to do it. Yeah. So wow, it was real fast. So it was super fast. But I felt like it was something I could do because the whole idea was like exposing the nitty gritty process. It wasn't about having this super polished, edited series of webinars. It was like, if you've ever wanted to actually like sit in and watch what a conversion copywriter will like actually does to like get you the deliverable that you need, this is how it's done. So that kind of like sets like an agenda for the course. So it was really good. Like I would love to do another course, you know, and I might do something. I'm thinking about doing another one in 2017. I think it would be really cool. Like I would like to do a course that is pre-recorded, that is polished and is concise, you know, that people could maybe just like buy, like a, just a video course, you know, and they can just go through them and learn how this process is done on their own. So that, again, that's like something possibly for 2017, but it was, you know, it was a really good time. I think one of the things that I didn't realize when I started, it's so funny because like, if you are a neurotic, anxious person, then the whole prospect of like, oh, do you want to teach a class? Like your immediate projection of like how that's going to go is you're going to A, blank, not know what you're going to say, and everybody is going to hate you. And that's like, it's so ridiculous. Like it's such a ridiculous way of looking at it. And, but it is how I think a lot of us will look at it. That's why we all fear like public speaking and stuff. And then you do it and like people are like super nice. Like they're like, you come in, you're like, hey guys. And everyone like is on chat and they're like, hey, good morning. How's it going? Hello from France. Like, hi from Brazil. Like, it's like fun. It's like really, I don't know, like everyone's there to learn and have a good time. And so, yeah, I would definitely like, I would do it again. The only thing stopping me from doing it again is again, my laziness.
Although I was going to ask you, you know, I'm interested in a course, creating a course of some kind, who knows what it will look like, but what would you suggest to people that are thinking of creating a course, potentially a live one like yours? Mm. What would you do differently second time around?
Well, the second time around, I think I would plan it. I would give myself more time to put it together. I mean, that was something that we was just like not something that we could adjust. Like Pep had a schedule, like, and that was the way it was going to go. And it was like my course was going to be first and then someone else is going to do another course. So yeah, more prep time, I think, is important. I think the one thing that I would say that is the number one thing, it's not something that I would do differently, but it's something that I had never even thought of before I collaborated with Pep, is if you have a cool idea for a course, propose it to someone who has like put it together, you know, and make it awesome or whatever, but pitch it to people who have high traffic engaged audiences. If Pep had not asked me to do it, it would never have occurred to me to like, oh, I should just like put together this awesome content and then make it available to him. And, you know, we can collaborate on it and then everybody wins, right? Like I would have probably just made a course and like put it on my own website, which is woefully neglected, and then like hope to get, you know, hope that somebody notices it, right? So I think that's the biggest thing is like, if you're going to do a course, pitch it to somebody, like make sure it's unique and that it's something that they haven't heard before, but then pitch it to someone who has the traffic, I think.
Yeah, I think matching your knowledge and content to Pep's list is just a recipe for great success.
Yeah, it worked out really well. And it was like a gap in something that his audience, like his particular audience, they were interested in. I think a lot of people are very interested in like product messaging and how to do it right and how to do it in a research-based way. So it really did. It was like a super good compliment. And it worked out. So yeah, I'm hopefully, fingers crossed, 2017. Yeah. And then, oh, and the other thing I think I would make sure to do for next time is like probably make my classes a bit shorter. One of the things that I did not realize with the course was that like you get people like asking you questions and you want people to be asking you questions and being engaged in the course, right? So it's great when people start like pinging you with questions in chat, but that's not good for people who are watching it later. Because then it becomes this extremely disjointed, one-sided conversation that you are having with these people in chat. And so there is a trade-off there of like the more engaged and spontaneous and that you are with your live session recordings, good thing for the people who are there. But keep in mind that it's being recorded and there are other people who were not there who are going to want to be able to use that material later. So that's like, if you are going to try to do that model, you know, you may want to make some time afterwards to like edit the material so that people who are coming in later, they don't necessarily have to sit around for like all the back and forth. They can like just get the concise, like need to know stuff. Or
it's a really, really good takeaway.
Yeah. Really. I completely forgot that I was being recorded. Like I was like, so I was having these like fun. I was having like the time, like I was like, woo, like these guys are awesome. And like, we're having like, this is great. Like everyone's so engaged. And then like, I realized afterwards, I was like, oh, like maybe they don't want to hear me talking about, I don't know what I would have been talking about, but something very like irreverent and not necessarily a need to know for their exam, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Momo, I wish we had more time. Like we've still got a bunch of questions we could ask about, you know, analytics and how you do that right, about, you know, your process, you know, how you wireframe. We should definitely have you come back.
For sure.
And do another show with us. But until then, how would people find you if they wanted to connect with you?
They can find me either on Facebook, which I only recently started using again after not being online for a really long time. Yeah, so you can look me up, just like Google me, Momoko Price. And then like there's either like Facebook, you can just like email me at momoko@kantan.io. But yeah, I mean, you know, like that's just goes to show you what a recluse I am. Like normally a normal person would just be like, oh yeah, hit me up on Twitter. My name is like, blah. I'm like, no, you can send me a letter through the post and then maybe I will get it. Like, yeah. But anyways, you can email me.
You're not the first copywriter we've talked to with that, hideaway process.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough.
But. It's brutal. 2017, man, I'm going to be out there.
Well, we'll interview you at the end of 2017 to see how out there you are.
Oh god. Yeah. Oh no.
We'll hold you accountable.
All right, man.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Momo.
Thanks, Momo. You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hugg and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.